This is the Dreamers Podcast, where dreamers share their stories to inspire you. Now, join host Joe Pardo as he interviews a dreamer who's living their dreams.
By just hearing you now, I feel like I could close my eyes and be watching TV in my room.
Which park would you like to talk about? Africa, Asia, yeah.
All right, well, would you like to get started?
Of course, yeah, you are the boss.
Oh, no. No, that's Mickey.
Oh, and that's true.
And then you.
Okay. All right. Good. Thank you for the reminder. Very good. Very good.
Oh, hey, real quick. Did you get a chance to listen to Adventuratorium, that up-inspired Disney music hip-hop mashup done on two turntables?
Yeah, I did. I was able to hear a little. I was listening between sessions and did you do that?
Yeah, that was my project.
That's very cool.
Oh, thank you. I actually printed up CDs and they're selling on the website for $10 and $2.50 goes to Give Kids the World, which, as you probably know, is a wonderful organization.
Yeah, I did the live podcast with Mike Rauman, and when they did the 12-hour live podcast, Be Our Guest podcast.
Oh, Be Our Guest. Okay.
Yeah, they had, it was live, and so they had, you know, people scattered throughout the day, and all the proceeds were going to Give the Kids the World, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I plan on trying to get over there, maybe in September when I go down. Because I'll be by myself and I'll have a car and I'll have a bunch of free time. So I'll probably try to pop over there and just say hi, maybe drop a few CDs off.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very creative and very, it was very cool. It was very cool and very talented.
Well, thank you. Let's get started because there's plenty of questions.
I'll do my best. I'll have Google ready in case I don't know.
All right. It's not all Disney based.
Okay, good. I imagine, I don't know why, I think people would get sick of hearing me talk about Disney, but I guess not.
All right. Welcome to the Dreamers Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Pardo, and today I have the pleasure of interviewing Stacey J. Aswad. Is living her dream through being an actress, voice actress, VO Buzz Weekly, and Must Do Disney, which can be seen when you turn on your TV at any of the Disney World Resort hotels. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Hi, thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. I'm glad that we could finally get our schedule together.
I know. It's been very exciting, but I love the whole concept of your show. And I mean, I'm a big fan of dreaming big and just going after your dreams, no matter who or what gets in your way. So I think it's awesome. So thank you so much for including me in your vision.
No, not a problem. Thank you for agreeing to be a part of it. Let's get started by giving some background about yourself.
I'm originally from the East Coast. I'm from New York. As a performer, my whole first life was as a dancer, choreographer, and I was a artistic roller skater. I danced and choreographed for a long, long time all over the place, doing ballet and modern and flamenco and all kinds of things. And I grew up dancing and doing dancing in opera companies, and then I went to Juilliard and had that incredible experience. Then I started getting into kind of a natural segue from dancing and choreographing. I was asked to audition for some television commercials, and then all of a sudden I was doing on-camera work and then started doing theater and television and films. And then back in 2005, I was invited to audition for a little place called Disney Parks. And I booked the hosting gig for, it was then the Top 7 Must-Sees, which is now Must Do Disney. And a little over seven years ago, I moved out to LA, and it's just been kind of a whirlwind. I mean, I'm getting to do what I love. And I mean, I've always been a performer in some form or fashion. I was always doing something either on stage or in my family's living room and making my family watch my one-woman Nutcracker performances. And God only knows what else I had them do. And they were very lovely and supportive and still are. And so now I get to do all these different areas of performance on camera and on the mic and voiceover and on the web. And so I'm just really grateful that I've, number one, have a family, especially amazing parents, that always understood that I was a creative extroverted kid. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I worked really hard in school because that was always the compromise, was if you want to do your art, you have to have something between your ears and you have to be able to have something to fall back on, especially as a dancer. You know, you can have one wrong step literally and your career can end from an injury. So I worked really hard in school, but it was very much like, I want to do great in school so I can get done with it and move on to what I want to do. So my parents have always been incredibly supportive and still are every day. I mean, I talk to them every day, and every time I book a job or every time something really great happens with my career, I feel like I share it with them because it would not be possible without them. I feel so, so grateful that they understood how I'm wired and who I am and allowed me to really be myself and be authentic to, I mean, I've done other things. I mean, I've been a teacher and I've been a fitness trainer and but I've done other things, but in my cells, in my core, I am a performer. And so being creative every day, just, it's who I am. I can't escape it, even if I wanted to, I think.
And we're all very grateful for that.
Thanks. Thank you.
What does being creative and performing mean to you?
I think being creative means, and I think creativity is not just something limited to artists. I mean, doctors are creative and chefs are creative and teachers, my gosh, are creative. And I think it's really when you allow your intuition, your instinct, your little small voice, when you allow it to be a big voice and you allow it to really inform what you do and what you say and how you act. And I think your creativity is really like your true essence of who you really are. And so I think when you can marry that with whatever you do as a quote job or career, I think that that really, for me anyway, is when I'm my happiest. And you know, I when people say like, oh, what's your job? I mean, it really, I truly feel like what I do, it's part of who I am. So it's not, I don't look at it as my work, which is why you could probably call me a workaholic, because I'm always doing something, whether it's for my web show Vio Buzz Weekly or on social media, interacting with the wonderful people who reach out to me that love Disney and love my show. And I might be staining a piece of furniture. I might be cooking. I love to cook and bake. I mean, I'm always doing, or knitting. Like, I'm always doing something that's about taking nothing and making it into something, or taking chaos and turning it into something that makes sense. And so I think that creativity really is just being, listening to who you are and allowing it to come out of you in whatever makes the most sense. And yeah, so that for me, that's, I think, how I would probably define it.
What would you say inspires you?
Oh gosh, a lot of things inspire me. I hike almost every day, and there's a hike near my house that goes up into the canyon. It's really beautiful, and I go, well, now when it's so bloody hot, I go at like the crack of dawn because I do not like the heat. So, and anytime I'm in nature, I don't take my phone with me. I just allow myself to be really immersed in whatever the environment is, and so I get inspired by being in nature. I get inspired by working with other incredibly talented and interesting and curious people. My cats inspire me, just how they're so fearless and open and in the moment, and they don't live with worry or I wonder what's going to happen around the corner. Like, they just go full on into their lives every second. Music inspires me. I love music. I love movement, obviously, being a dancer. And I just love being curious. And I always kind of have this mentality that I'll try, obviously within reason, I'll try anything. I'll give my best to anything, because what's the worst that could happen? I learn something, or I fail at something, but I still, even when you fall down, you learn and you get back up and you try again. So I just like to really try to have new experiences, and what I do every day, I never know exactly what my day is going to be like and what I'm going to be doing. And especially auditioning every day, I mean, I get told no more than I get told yes. I get inspired by the no almost more than the yes, because it really forces you to tap into your inner strength and your truth. And, you know, when people tell you, no, you're not right for this part, or you're not right for that part, it could defeat you and you could say, oh gosh, but I don't take it personally. I go, okay, great. And I move on and I try to learn from it. And I just go, you know what, the things that are important to me and the things that matter the most in my life, no one can take away from me. So if I get a job, I get it. If I don't, means I maybe have a little free time tomorrow and I get to cook something or go to the grocery store or work out or, you know, it's just, I try to just let it roll off my back. I'm very duck-like, I think. I've been doing this long enough that I have a really thick skin, really thick skin.
Well, I think that's a great attitude to have regardless of the field that you're in.
Yeah, I think maybe so. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great stuff happening in the world and there certainly is a lot of not so great stuff happening in the world. And I think social media is amazing in general when it's used for good and it's used for empowering and inspiring people and uplifting people. But there certainly is a lot out there that isn't great and it's negative. And, you know, listen, there's negativity in the world and I don't walk around in a bubble. I'm a strong, resilient person and I can power through most anything. But I think that the more we kind of focus on our likenesses and supporting each other and reaching a hand out and helping somebody, I just think that's when we're at our best, whether it's an animal or an elderly person or somebody with maybe less opportunity or resources. I just think that it makes all of us better if we can do that versus pushing people down. I just don't see how that really helps anybody.
Sorry, I just had this vision of you pushing people down and like at rope drop or something.
Yeah, I'm small. I'm small, but I'm scrappy. So don't count me out. I'm only 5'2", but I am scrappy.
You're only 5'2"?
Yeah.
I would have never guessed that.
Well, someone told me I'm kind of like those fun size Snickers bars. They're like, if you were normal size, it would be just too much. Like there'd be too much energy. So they're like, you had to be kind of smushed down. But I do like wearing, they always put me in some sort of heels, whether it's wedges or stilettos. And, you know, so I always, people think I am taller because I'm very rarely in flat shoes.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds about right. Cause now that I'm thinking about it, every time I see you in video, it's mm-hmm. Yeah. I assumed you were probably like 5'9", 5'10".
Oh my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. No, I can't even imagine what the air quality is like up there. I don't even know. Yeah, I could tell you about the lower stratosphere. That's where I live. But I jump around a lot, so I guess I do hit it once in a while.
So how did your dream of performing come about?
Well, I started roller skating competitively when I was, gosh, my sisters, I have four sisters, four wonderful sisters, and we went to a birthday party, a roller skating birthday party. And the five of us were out there skating and it was at a rink where they had a competitive skating club. And I guess you see five little girls rolling around like little penguins. We caught their eye. And so the coaches asked my parents if we would be interested in taking lessons and competing. And so we all did it together for a long time. It was great. We would go in like a Winnebago, the seven of us, and we would go all over the country. It was just hysterical. We looked like the Brady Bunch on wheels. That's kind of where I first started performing, was as a skater, because you're out there competing in front of the audience and the judges. And then I started dancing. I started taking ballet because my coaches wanted me to work with a choreographer for my routines. And so I started taking ballet. And then like with most things in my life, when I start something, I do it 100% or 0%. So I, of course, was like, I can skate 5 days a week and I can dance 5 days a week and I can play piano and I, you know, I can go to school and I can do my homework and I can do all this. And mind you, my parents were not forcing me. They were not those kind of parents that were pushing me. I mean, I was the one who they'd say, okay, seriously, close the piano, you have to go to sleep. So I was very, when I found something I really loved, I just go crazy with it. So I started really as a skater and then I started dancing. It kind of got to a point where I needed to make a bit of a choice because I started dancing 6 and 7 days a week and performing. And so I took a break from skating and then I actually went back to skating when I lived in the Midwest and kind of hooked up with some skaters there. Skating is cool because it's one of those things it's literally like a bike. You can pick it up and you can drop it and then, you know, get back into it with some practice and, you know, you kind of never forget what you know. But I would say then from there it was dancing and then it got into theater and on-camera stuff. And so I really have been prancing around since I was a little kid, probably.
So, I mean, you already said that your family was really supportive. What about when it came time to go to college and or not go to college? Like, how was it? Like, I want to be an actress. I want to perform. I want to dance. I want to do all this stuff.
My parents are really were always very strict, but they were always really fair. They always you were always heard whether you were going to get what you wanted, but they always you knew you could at least say, well, this is what I think and this is what I feel. And sometimes you would come to the same conclusion, and sometimes they go, that was very lovely, very nicely said, but no. So when it came time for college, what I did was, you know, there was never a I think I always knew I would go to college, but I knew that I was not a small campus kind of person, that I needed something that wasn't enclosed. I needed a city. I needed to have no walls around me. So I applied to regular universities and colleges, but in my mind, I think I was probably in the middle of high school or early high school, maybe even the end of junior high school, where I just Juilliard just came on my radar. And I never really, and probably it's a blessing, I didn't really understand the whole concept of you audition, but they may not invite you to come. And so I just kind of went, oh, I'm going to go to Juilliard. I will attend the Juilliard school and there you go. I will be a dance major and I will graduate in 4 years and I will be fabulous. And so I just kind of set my sights on that. So when it came time to start applying, my parents said, well, that's great. And that's wonderful. And let's do the application. But let's also have some, we call it what you call the safety schools. And so I applied to some state universities in New York because they're amazing. The SUNY schools are amazing education and so affordable. And so I applied to some different schools. And I actually in high school was taking some college level courses and some dance classes in my senior year of high school. So I was kind of in that scene, but I just knew I wanted to be somewhere where I would eat, drink, and sleep dance. But the great thing about Juilliard is that it's a BFA in dance. So you have to take fine arts academics and it's not just running around in a leotard all day. I mean, I had to take some hardcore, a lot of music and a lot of academics. So thankfully, they accepted me because I don't really, I mean, I would have gone to some of my backup schools, but I didn't really want to because Juilliard was, I just felt like I could see myself there. I am a visual person by nature, but I literally could just see myself walking past Lincoln Center and walking into 66th Street. You know, that's just what I saw. My parents were really, really supportive. But again, it was, okay, that's great, but you definitely need to make sure you get the bachelor's degree and have that piece of paper that says that you're a beautiful dancer, but you also are someone who can put two thoughts together. So it worked out really well. And then that degree has really served me well. You know, it's interesting because when I was at Juilliard, I didn't walk around thinking, oh, I'm so hotsy-totsy, I'm at Juilliard and look at me. I mean, because it's really intense and you can be cut at any minute. There's no guarantee once you get accepted, you're going to graduate. So you're just trying to survive and trying to make the cut every year and be at a certain standard. So when after I graduated was when I really sort of, when people would say, oh my gosh, you went to Juilliard. Oh my gosh. That's when I kind of went, wow, yeah, okay. And I've seen statistics where it's something crazy like 15,000 people audition and they only accept a few hundred or 1,000. So it's kind of crazy. I mean, I started with 28 people in my freshman year and only 14 of us graduated. So it's pretty intense, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's an incredible experience. And my gosh, it taught me just unbelievable life skills that I use, discipline and motivation and the show must go on and just so many things that I know are why I'm surviving in the crazy world of entertainment in Los Angeles. There's no question about that.
Well, I mean, you walked right into the next question, which is what steps did you take?
I didn't cheat. I promise. I can't even see you. I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what your notes are. I'm not a cheater.
Okay, Nixon.
Good one.
So what steps did you take to get started? Like once you got out of college, you know, you're like, okay, I got this paper. What now?
Well, I danced a lot. I danced in ballet companies and modern companies. You know, I really love New York. I'm a New Yorker for sure. I mean, I lived upstate and I lived right in the city and I love New York. But I also got really curious about what else was going on in the arts in other parts of the country. So I started sending resumes out. You know, I love performing and I still do, but I was like, okay, when I graduated from Juilliard, they said to me, you're a beautiful performer, you're a beautiful choreographer, but you also are really smart and you have the capacity to be a producer and to create other things and you can articulate, you understand the concepts of your art form, not just the execution of it. So that always kind of stuck with me. And at the time I was like, uh-huh, okay, that sounds like a compliment. Great, thanks. But I didn't really know, I couldn't really quite process exactly what all of that meant. And then as I was dancing in New York and performing a lot, I realized that I did want to be a decision maker and I did want to be someone who was deciding what the music was going to be and what the costumes were going to be and the performance venue and be a producer. And so I started producing some of my own stuff in New York. And then I really realized that I loved to teach. After I graduated, one of my former faculty members hired me as a teacher in this dance program that she taught in. And I realized I really loved teaching. And so I started sending resumes around the country and I ended up taking a position. Well, I was dancing with the ballet company in Louisville, Kentucky, and then, or Louisville, for those people who live there. And I started teaching at the Performing Arts High School there. And that was just amazing. I got to teach middle school students and high school students. And I really wasn't that much older than they were, but I just was so jazzed about dance and choreography. And so that was just an amazing experience. And having that degree, definitely, I mean, I had to go through a really rigorous interview process and the Board of Education and being obviously in a public school, there were just lots of hoops that I had to jump through. So having that piece of paper was definitely, I don't know that I would have gotten that. Actually pretty certain I wouldn't have gotten that position had I not had it. And it led to other things and it really just allowed me to find other passions that I had. And so it was important. I mean, you know, but I also meet a lot of people out here that college isn't necessarily where they learn the most. I mean, some people really do learn from the school of life. And so I think it's very different. I mean, I think going to college now is a very different experience than when I went because there's almost so many choices that it's almost overwhelming. For me, not going to college was not really a thought, but I would say if I had to do it all over again, I would still do it because what I learned and the experience I had was definitely life shaping for sure.
Well, how did you go from the school to Disney?
Well, I moved to Charlotte, North Carolina, and at that point I was still dancing and choreographing, and then I started auditioning for, I was doing plays and I was doing TV work because there's a lot of television work that happens there. I drove to Atlanta for an audition for something else, and while I was there, the casting director said, we have this project that's auditioning tomorrow, we can put you on tape for it today instead of you driving back 8 hours round trip. So I was like, great. So I went on tape for the Top 7 Must Sees. That was the campaign back in 2005. And I got a call back, drove back to Atlanta a few days later for the call back and met the director. And it was a really quick process, actually, because they had done a national casting and it came down to me and a woman in LA. And so I guess things had taken maybe longer than they were supposed to, so they had to do it really quickly. So by the time I found out that I got the job and had to be in Orlando, it was just a matter of a few days. So I had to learn the script and just get on board with the whole thing in just a matter of days. So it was really intense because that was my very first official host job. I had never done anything like that before. I had never been a straight-to-camera host. There's no teleprompter. There's no cue cards. It's all coming out of my brain, either scripted or ad-lib. So it was intense, I have to say. I was really excited for the challenge. I was like, okay. And that's where having my skating competition experience, I just really like, I was like, okay, this is just like when you're skating. You get one shot at it. You got to be amazing and there's no take two. And so I just kind of approached it from that point and knew that if they hired me, they must have seen something that they liked. So I didn't second guess it. I said, okay, these people know what they're doing. So I'm going to believe that they made the right decision and I'm just going to believe that I can do it. And it's been an incredible opportunity. I mean, it's just like, it was supposed to be for a year and here we are in 2014. So I just don't even have enough words of excitement and gratitude for how much I love doing it and how much I love sharing people's memories. I mean, I'm there, but I'm not there. And just hearing from people how I become a part of their special time as a family is really cool. It makes me really, really happy to know that I'm part of really happy memories for people.
Yeah, I mean, I could watch it for a long time. And I have waiting for my wife to get ready or you know, whatever.
Thank you.
I mean, no problem. I mean, did you ever think it would last that long?
You know, I didn't. I mean, I kind of thought, oh, okay, it'll be a year. And at the time, I was still living in North Carolina. But as each year goes on, I kind of just go, okay. Like, I don't really think about it. And with most of the stuff I do, I don't really get attached to the expectation of, oh, this is going to be big or this is going to last a long time, because it just kind of takes me down a different lane. And I just kind of like to ride it and just be really excited when it's happening and while it's happening and not really get too fixated on, oh no, like, is this going to be good or is it going to last? I just kind of go, you know, I'm here, I'm doing it, and I'm just going to have a great time and I'm just going to do my best work and be a blessing to the situation. And so that's kind of how I just cope, I think, because otherwise there's just chronic opportunities for disappointment, which I kind of like to avoid.
So what roadblocks have you hit along the way?
Oh, gosh. Well, I've been told that I'm short a lot. And those are the best kind of roadblocks, because you're like, uh-huh. Okay, well, what would you like me to do about it? You know? So I think specific roadblocks, I would say, are, you know, just knowing that you're not always going to get what you want. And, you know, there's times when you're auditioning for a job or you're doing something and you know, my gosh, I would be so perfect for this. And, oh, I want this so, so, so badly. And you don't get it. You know, the more it happens, the more I realize I'm just getting more proficient at just trying to focus on what matters the most. And I know it sounds really like, oh, come on, but it's true, because at the end of the day, I mean, you're going to get a lot of work and you're not going to get a lot of work, and you're going to make a lot of money and then you're going to lose a lot of money. But at the end of the day, when you take all of that away, I mean, what really truly matters in your life, and the relationships and the people and the memories and the opportunities. So like I said before, I mean, I've been told no a lot. But somehow I just try to find the opportunity in it and the learning in it, because at the end of the day, I'm choosing to do this with my life. No one's forcing me. I'm not a hostage. So if it's not making me happy, and if I'm not finding as much joy, if not more, in the roadblocks as I do in the open highway, then I need to get out of it and I need to do something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. What disappointments have you come along the way? Like, you thought there was going to be, you know, a rainbow and ended up being storm clouds.
I think that what I've encountered living in Los Angeles, being very different from New York, New Yorkers are, they're direct. They say yes if they mean yes. They say no if they mean no. And there's no, I think New Yorkers, and not because I am one, I think they're lovely, sweet, friendly, wonderful people. People will say, oh, they're mean. They're not mean. They're just direct. And they say what they're going to do, and they say what they're not going to do, and there's no gray. What I found in Los Angeles is that there's a lot of, oh, you're so amazing, or, oh, this is what's going to happen, and yes, we're going to do this show, and you're going to be the host, and we're going to do this show, and you're going to be the star, and you're going to do this movie. And it's all just blah, blah, blah. So I've realized that in LA, there's a lot of kind of smoke and mirrors. And so you just have to kind of really listen to what's not being said, is what I've kind of, is the best way I can describe it, you know. But I've been up for some big stuff, and then I find out that the client's wife got it, or the producer's daughter got it, I try not to focus on the things that I can't control because you will go crazy. You know, you can't control if they want a celebrity to do that or the producer's daughter or the director's mom or, you know, whatever. Like there's just, there's so many aspects you can't control. And so I go through long stretches of time where I just am totally cool. And then something will happen. Like there was something the other day that it was this big fitness campaign. And I found out that the client's wife got it. And I had gone through callback after callback after, and it was down to like me. And I found out I was like the top two or the top three. And I was like, oh my gosh. And you're trying not to get super, super over the top excited, but you're, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so close. And then I didn't get it. And then I found out the client's wife got it. Well, how am I supposed to, I mean, what do you do with that? Like, you can't, what are you going to do? You know, there's, it didn't mean that I wasn't good enough or there's nothing wrong with me. It's just what it is. So there's like those kinds of politics and those kinds of things that you just can't control. So you just try to move past it and go on to the next one and just kind of don't stay too long at the party. Just get in and get out.
It sounds to me like people out there don't know the value of time or money.
Well, I mean, you know, I think in some ways they do and in some ways they don't. I mean, you know, things move really fast out here and anymore, I mean, they'll give a show one episode and if the numbers aren't right, it gets canceled. I mean, there's no more, oh, they do for television shows, they buy a whole season necessarily. A lot of times if the first or second episode doesn't score in the ratings, they cancel it. So it's a very, so when you asked me earlier about, you know, Disney and it going on for a long time and did I expect anything? I, in the most positive way, I don't expect anything because otherwise you're just always feeling like you're on eggshells. So I just barrel through and I just go, hey, this is still happening. That's awesome. And you just kind of stay in that. I just stay in that kind of headspace. It just makes it a happier place for me to be.
So what would you say your favorite concert you've ever been to was?
Aerosmith was pretty amazing. Aerosmith and Cheap Trick. You know, it's all the same original guys. So that was pretty incredible. Peter Gabriel was an amazing concert. Kiss was wildly entertaining. But then again, like I love musicals, West Side Story, Wicked. I love watching live theater and live musicals because I love that it's just this huge epic production. I mean, Les Miserables is my favorite musical, I think, of all time. I've seen it a bunch of times and I just adore it. I mean, I'm a rock person. I'm actually going to see Paul McCartney in a couple weeks out here at Dodger Stadium, which is going to be pretty incredible. He hasn't been back at Dodger Stadium since the 60s with the Beatles. So I'm really excited about that. I've always wanted to see him live. So that's going to be pretty cool. I'm anticipating that to be on my top list.
So could you share a favorite memory?
Well, one that comes to mind is driving cross country in an RV to move to Los Angeles. That was a pretty amazing memory because I had never driven cross country before and I didn't know what was ahead of me. Literally or metaphorically. I mean, I didn't know what I was coming to. I had no life started here. So that was a cool time. That was a couple of days of just like excitement and anticipation. And absolutely, and not to brown nose the interviewer, but definitely the first time I shot at Disney, the very first, we were in World Showcase at like sunrise. I was standing in World Showcase. That was a moment because I was like, oh my gosh, this is something I could feel this was a moment. And that was, you know, in 2005 and I'm still going back and I'm still standing in World Showcase or Magic Kingdom at sunrise. And literally every time I go, it does not get old. It does not get, oh yeah, I've got to do this again. It literally feels like the first time I go because I never know exactly what's going to happen and the people I'm going to meet and just the fun, cool accidents and things that happen. So that I love it. Those are definitely highlights for me.
I'm sure it was quite an experience, especially the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You're probably thinking like, man, what am I doing here?
I know, because I was like, oh my gosh, are they going to find me out? Like I thought, oh no. I mean, the first time they put my mic on and there's all these characters running around me. They call action and I have to start talking. And it was like, oh my gosh. And it was just everyone staring at me. It was intense. It was intense. But I wouldn't have trade. I won't trade it. Anytime it happens, I wouldn't trade it. And now when I go, I mean, a lot of times we're shooting before the park opens and a lot of times we're shooting when the parks are open. So now people stand around, guests will stand around and watch us. So I love, it's like it's being taped, but it also feels like a live performance too, because people are watching and I want them to feel something, even though it's being put on camera. I want them to feel that same kind of energy, because I get energy from all these people being around and watching, and I want to do a great job, of course. And I don't want them to be like, oh my gosh, she can't even talk. What's her problem? So I feel that excitement of, oh, I want to nail it, every, you know, take after take after take, because I mean, I'm just really, I'm kind of competitive by nature. I mean, I'm really, I have really high expectations of myself and giving my best, whatever it is I'm doing, whether I'm working or baking cookies. I mean, I really want things to be good, be great, be brilliant. So I really set my bar every time I go. I set my bar for myself really high that I need to try to get above.
So what do your dreams for the future look like?
Well, I'm really, really passionate about my web show, VO Buzz Weekly. In a little over 2 years, Chuck Duran, my co-producer and co-host, we've created something that's really exciting because it's about voiceover, hence the name VO Buzz Weekly. But it's really, as the time has gone on, it really is a show about studying and celebrating the patterns and behaviors of successful people and the qualities they have, the stories and the experiences they've had that they're so generous to share about resilience and persistence and rejection and rising above, you know, a lot of what we're talking about. And so I feel like it's definitely made me a better performer and host, but it's also, I feel like I'm in a masterclass, like every single time we sit down with someone, because it's like you're learning from people and their experiences, and without even really realizing it, it's absorbing into you and it's helping you. And we're in over 85 countries and growing, and people are really excited about it. And I'm excited about it because it's inspiring people and it's helping people and it's giving people that motivation, whether it's in voiceover or anything. It doesn't have to be a voiceover related career that you're pursuing, but just anything that really is compelling to you or challenging to you, hearing somebody else talk about how they got started and how they rose above challenges and how they became their best and are still challenging themselves and still growing and still evolving. That's a universal human story. That's not something that's just unique to voiceover. So I just like that we're really trying to, working hard, putting out good into the world, and we're getting ready to do some really cool upgrades to the show. And so I love that it's allowing me to be a host, but a producer, a director, a writer, that I'm getting to wear a lot of different hats, and that we're creating something that is helping people. I love that. So that's a big dream, is to keep that growing and keep really taking that to the stars and beyond. And I'm really developing my voiceover career and the different areas of voiceover that I work in. And I just did an audiobook for Random House, which was really cool. And I'm just really working hard at my skills and really making sure that I'm ready whenever that opportunity is knocking or that door is opening, that I am ready to walk through and I don't have a second thought if I'm ready. And another big dream for me is to be a huge part of ending animal homelessness and really using my voice and my resources to make people aware of what's happening and what's not happening when it comes to animals and their welfare. And I do believe that with a global consciousness, we can really change. We can really make some amazing changes and not have shelters full of beautiful animals that are healthy, that have no homes and are being euthanized. I think that just, if I can see that end in my lifetime, I will be so excited.
No, it would be great. In fact, I was just about to ask you if you'd like to talk about your charity work.
Yeah, I mean, I work with a lot of different organizations. On my website, if you go to stacyjaswa.com to the charity page, if you want an autographed picture, I'll personalize it, and it's a $20 donation, and all of that goes to various charities, whether it's Guide Dogs for the Blind or ASPCA or Best Friends or Alley Cat Allies. I really just try to spread it out, try to do whatever I can do to help the rescue groups and the organizations that are fighting to advocate for animals and help prosecute people for animal cruelty and animal testing and all of that. So I hope at some point to have my own sanctuaries or be involved in building sanctuaries and also being a part of, you know, larger charity groups. But that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment. And obviously all my cats are rescue animals. I am always trying to help people find and foster dogs and cats and turtles and whatever needs a home. You know, in my network out here, we're all rallying and helping, you know. And now a big thing is that in China, the dog meat festivals and all of that. I mean, I'm working with some people on that to try to raise awareness and get that shut down. So it could be a full-time job without a doubt, but I'm just trying to use my voice and, you know, if nothing else, help people just start talking about it and becoming aware of it. If you want a purebred animal, that's great, but just know there are purebred rescue organizations and groups. It just might take a little longer, might take a little more research, but instead of buying an animal, you can adopt one and change their life and yours with just a little bit, maybe more effort, a little more time. It can happen. So I just think it's really important for people to investigate the resources in their communities and do what they can do to help those groups sustain themselves and support them however they can, whether it's volunteering. It doesn't have to be money. It can be service.
No, I think that's great. And I think it's really nice that you are so passionate about it. You know, I know you've been doing it for a long time. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, if I could bring every beautiful creature, if I had a house big enough, I would, but you know, I'm not an animal hoarder, but I mean, it just, if I, whatever I can do to try to help, whether it's actually rescue them myself, which I've done, but now help people add to their families and just get the word out that there's a lot that can be done. And it doesn't take a lot of time and effort. It just takes a step in a different direction to really make a change.
So is there any last thoughts you'd like to share?
Whoever's listening, and to you, Joe, thank you so much for having me and just for, you know, doing what you do, because I think it's wonderful to help inspire people to think about what matters and what they want in their lives and what their dreams are, and just know that, my gosh, there is absolutely, as long as you're breathing, there is nothing that's impossible. There is no dream that is too big. There's going to be people along the way that are going to tell you all the whys and the why nots of why you shouldn't think that or do that or believe that. But at the end of the day, it's your life, it's your journey, it's your path. And if it makes sense to you and it's helping people along the way, then, you know, what's the leap in the net will appear is what I'm always saying to myself. And so far, knock on wood, it has. So.
Well, it's come with a lot of hard work, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had to use the net too much because my wings are still working. So I am probably a cat myself because I always land on my feet no matter what. I always do. And I believe I still will no matter what.
Well, I'd love for you to plug your websites and let people know how they can connect with you.
Oh, cool. On Facebook, it's host Stacey J. Aswad. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Stacey J. Aswad. And then StaceyJAswad.com is my website. And VOBuzzWeekly.com is my web show. And thanks to many people recording in their hotel rooms and resort rooms, you can see me on YouTube. Must do Disney. Or if you can't go to Orlando. So you can find me a lot of places. So come visit. Say hi. I try to stay on top of it.
I'll have them all in the show notes at howtodream.co.
Cool. Thanks.
Not a problem at all. I really appreciate your kind words for the show. And I hope that it reaches a lot of people and helps them maybe find a different career path or just even a new hobby.
Yeah. Well, I believe it will. And, you know, it's, you know, there's the challenges, but you just keep doing it because you just never know. You just never know who's listening and how you're helping and that one little thing or that one episode or that one thought. So you should feel good when you put your head on the pillow. You're doing good. You're doing good stuff, man.
Well, thank you. You are as well.
Thank you.
When the head does finally hit the pillow.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thanks again for being on the show, Stacey. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.